You are listening to The Healthcare Insider, a radio show by and for the movers, shakers, and innovators in the healthcare industry.
All right, good afternoon and welcome back to this special edition of The Healthcare Insider. Today is part two of our ongoing ICD-10 Roundtable series, and returning to the show is my friend and colleague Joe Lavelle, President and CEO of Results First Consulting. Joe, welcome back. How are you, my friend?
Doing great, Todd. Thanks. Great to join you.
Well, it's good to have you back. Quickly, Joe, remind the audience about Results First.
We help healthcare organizations get through major change. ICD-10, meaningful use of most importance right now.
All right. We're also joined, a new panelist in the roundtable is Jim Hennessy, CEO of E4 Services. Jim, welcome to the show.
Todd, good afternoon.
It's good to have you. Thanks for stopping by and joining us. Jim, before we get into our conversation, take a quick second. Tell us a little bit about you and your background and what E4 Services is all about.
E4 is, my background is about 27 plus years in the healthcare industry, particularly healthcare IT. And E4 is a healthcare strategic and IT consulting firm. We're helping customers throughout the country on various initiatives, ICD-10, other types of complex programs, and a lot of work within the health information management departments within organizations.
All right. Outstanding. Again, welcome to the show. Joe, you and I have been scheming out this roundtable series now, and what we originally intended to talk about today was testing, but there's been some developments this week that really cause a little bit of disturbance in the force here with this whole idea of this conversion to ICD-10. Can you shed some light on this week's developments?
Sure can, Todd. Thursday, almost, I guess from my perspective, out of nowhere, the news spread that Congress would be considering a bill that would delay ICD-10 by yet another year. The bill is quite complicated, has, I believe, 35 different pieces of legislation, very complex pieces, each one, and the ICD-10 delay just turned out to be part of that big legislation. The cynic in me says there's some politics at work here, because as the debate on this piece of legislation hit the House floor, they voted on it, determined that they didn't have a quorum to actually have a vote, so they went on and started talking about other things in the world, other more important things. And then about 45 minutes later, called what's called a voice vote very quickly and passed the amendment, which will move it on to the Senate on Monday, and really has put many of us that have been knee-deep in ICD-10 for the last 3 years in a place where we have to start replanning yet once again for another potential year in the timeline.
I don't even know where to begin on this. Jim, I'm thinking it's apples and oranges, and it's not right probably to talk about these two issues in one conversation, but I keep thinking about all the delays and all the extensions with the launch of the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, and it's just so confusing to the marketplace as to what the heck is really going on with the launch of that program. Speak to what this does to the organizations that have already invested considerable time and treasure beginning to get this conversion under control.
Yeah, I think the initial reaction is just overall frustration. I mean, specifically, we're helping around 20 different health systems throughout the country with their readiness to ICD-10. And as we've already started to poll the various executives, that there's a bit of a mixed reaction to it. One was they were all tracking to be ready regardless. So from that perspective, there's frustration that it's going to just be added time, added cost. But at the same point, there's a bit, in some cases, relief because, you know, they were under tremendous pressure for meaningful use and other initiatives. But the general piece's feeling has been that this is certainly going to penalize those organizations that have been responsible and have been putting the time and energy over the past year or longer into trying to get ready, really as a concession to those organizations that have done nothing and have just kept trying to, through back channels, to advocate for the delays. And I think the one other piece that's going to be a challenge, at least for a period of time now, is that, you know, as Joe spoke about the legislation that's out there, the particular section, it doesn't necessarily automatically delay it until next October of October 2015. Basically, what it does is it prevents CMS from implementing it prior to that date. So the conventional wisdom is that, hey, once CMS, who doesn't respond to, doesn't comment on pending legislation, if it passes, we're hoping that they'll give quick guidance on whether or not they're going to reaffirm the date to October 2015. But just like we had to deal with back in early 2012, when CMS announced the delay, there's going to be a period of uncertainty as to, is this really just going to be a one-year delay, or are there going to be other things that are going to be considered and factored into it, which I think will even further frustrate those organizations that have put so much into trying to be ready.
Joe, you know that I'm not as knee-deep in ICD-10 as the two of you, but as you know, I just spent several days with you at the HIMSS conference in Orlando and talked to dozens and dozens and dozens of organizations that have invested significant energy in dealing with this. I'm angry that this is happening to them, and what do they do? I mean, does an organization that's already made a significant advancement towards this conversion, do they just have to stop and wait, or can they go ahead and finish? And I feel like we are also rewarding the organizations that drag their feet on dealing with this issue. I mean, where do we go from here?
Great question. You know, the reality is, what we will, for those organizations that are ready, they're going to get another year to manage the risk of the change. So all those that have planned to be ready will be able to test and do what's called dual coding. So they'll be able to code in 9 and 10 for an entire year, and they'll be able to work out their entire process from registering patients to having their physicians provide improved specificity in their documentation through creating ICD-10 claims, and they'll be able to do that in parallel for a longer period of time. So although unfortunate for those that are ready, I think once we get over the initial shock, you'll see the planning that people do, you know, adjust for more testing and a much more rigorous dual coding program. For those that aren't ready, my belief is in the smaller hospitals and in physician practices, it gives them really a chance to do some testing as opposed to just go with their upgrade on October 1st and, you know, hope for the best. So I wish and I hope that at somewhere along the way, whoever can impose rules in addition to the delay can impose rules like making sure that vendors release their product well in advance of this October 1st. So those small physician practices that aren't yet upgraded can get their upgrade and can do and take advantage of a much longer period of testing.
Jim, I remember being blown away by the percentage of organizations that were not ready and were way behind the curve on preparing for the conversion. Does this continue? This is the second or third delay in this now. I mean, are they going to begin to think that the federal government is, all right, whatever, I can continue to drag my feet on this, because like I'm seeing with other things coming out of the government, they just continue to extend and delay. Is this going to open up a window where people are just going to say, I don't have to even take this seriously anymore?
That is an absolute real risk and consideration. When you think about, you know, when the delay was provided in late 2012 to push to this year, that we're sitting here right now, let's go before this past Wednesday, when we were all still marching towards October 2014, it was surprising how many organizations like the ones Joe mentioned still hadn't put a serious effort towards it. How many of the vendors, particularly when we look at some of the smaller ambulatory packages, that those vendors were still waiting to provide, give us an idea of when they were going to give us their upgraded version. All this does is reassure those folks who've now rolled the dice twice, gambled and won, saying, I don't need to put attention toward this now. Say, why would I not think that I can roll the dice again a third time? And the real frustration to that is that there's so many dependencies across stakeholder organizations with ICD-10. It's not just impacting your organization. As we've been working through, you know, major risk mitigation and contingency planning, one of the most common risks that we've looked at within the larger health systems is what happens if the feeder physician practices, all those affiliate practices, if they're not ready, how does that impact this health system who has put a lot of effort towards being ready? All this does is, from my perspective, I anticipate that if it gets reaffirmed, that's going to be now October 2015, that we'll probably be sitting here next March having the same conversations about the same organizations that have been responsible and getting ready are going to still be there. And to those organizations that are risks to the entire ecosystem are going to continue to be risks to that ecosystem because they have not taken advantage of the delay. They'll say, it pushed twice. Why should I put any energies into it now? I'll just play it out and take my chances.
I'll throw this up for the both of you. I mean, is there any risk that the rules change on this? And let me try to explain myself. So an organization that has been responsible and has taken the appropriate steps and, frankly, budgeted the appropriate cash to move towards the conversion date, they were operating under a certain set of understandings of what was expected and what they had to do. Is there any risk now that there's going to be further changes that they're going to have to go back because they complied with the timeline and that they'll have to make further adjustments and spend more cash to deal with them? Is that a risk?
If I could jump in first, Joe, I think that there's no question. I mean, one of the conversations that we'll start having very quickly with each of the organizations that we're assisting over the next week is starting to look at what the plan would look like if it got delayed to 2015, and what's that going to mean in terms of additional costs and additional effort that now having to stretch out this work that we were trying to get done before the end of this year, what's that going to look like extending out towards the end of next year? What it means is that work that's gone into major upgrade testing, you know, when you start thinking about testing, there's already been a majority of the major systems within each organization have already gone through the level of getting the compliant version, and organizations have already started to test those. Well, if you now play out to between now and October of 2015, it's likely, if you think about most traditional systems and vendors, there's going to be a few more release cycles that are going to come out, which just means that now they have to go through and test two different ways. They have to now continue to test supporting their current processes off of ICD-9, and then are also going to have to go through at some point and retest the work that they've done to make sure the I-10 pieces worked. So I think that there's no question that, unfortunately, there's going to be added cost to the overall budget for those organizations that had been preparing responsibly.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. Joe, do you have any additional comment there?
Yeah, I agree 100% with Jim. You know, I'm usually on the other side of the glass half empty. I'm the pessimist, but there is an optimistic side to this. The organizations Jim is working with, the organizations I'm working with, we are rolling in process improvements as we go. For example, process improvements and technology improvements to the clinical documentation process. So they're improving the level and quality of their clinical documentation now, and that will benefit them in ICD-9 and in ICD-10. And it will, hopefully in most cases have a positive effect on their reimbursement. So there's good and bad. From a cost standpoint, this is, you know, especially from the organizations that E4 and that I've been working with since the beginning that have taken this seriously, this is the second time they're going to have another multi-million dollar ICD-10 line on their project inventory. And that's just crazy. We can't complain, but at some point, you wonder if some of those people that have been compliant and really pursued this for so long are going to get weary as well, in addition to those vendors that haven't complied at all. And that's, I think, my biggest worry.
I was just going to make a quick addition to Joe's comments there in terms of, you know, what it does for plans is, you know, organizations have already been looking at saying, hey, right now our focus has to be on meaningful use and ICD-10. And they've been looking for relief in one of those areas. Most have said, you know, they really would prefer some relief in meaningful use just so they can get through I-10. But by now pushing, you know, they've put their 2-3 year plans in place now based upon the continual reaffirmation that October 2014 is going to be for ICD-10. So they're looking to start, whether it's major financial system implementations or other types of initiatives, we're getting slotted for 2015. This is certainly now disrupting those plans. The other point I would just want to make to kind of support Joe's comments is, you know, as we start having the conversations with our, you know, governance committees for ICD-10, the different customers, there's no question that we need to continue working. But we need to start doing it in an intelligent way, because there's a large part, as Joe had just mentioned there, that there were benefits that the organizations will achieve, even if it gets delayed. If they continue forward with their clinical documentation initiatives, if they move forward with the computer-assisted coding initiatives, other types of initiatives that they implemented to support and better position them for ICD-10, they're going to be able to benefit from those. So we're going to be working with those organizations to continue to advocate and push for those initiatives that they'll be able to gain benefit from, even if they don't have to officially submit codes in I-10 until 2015.
Joe, I want to flesh out the point you made. Unfortunately, I suspect the general public isn't aware of what this conversion is all about and don't understand how it really impacts them. But yeah, I mean, one of the benefits of the conversion is improved patient care and serving the patients better. And it's frustrating that the delay in this just delays the general industry's ability to push towards improved patient care. I mean, that's very frustrating, isn't it?
It is. You know, Todd, healthcare is hugely complicated. There, I mentioned the bill that this has been slid into has 34 other large initiatives that people probably have the same passion that we do about that are either being delayed or funded or... And the one part about ICD-10, it's kind of an infrastructural to move from ICD-9 to ICD-10. I've seen some people come out and say, we just need to rip the Band-Aid off. You know, we've got to get there. We've got to quit delaying. We could be in a place where we delay this every year, or we could just bite the bullet and say, let's go. So, you know, that's, to me, one of the biggest points I hope our senators consider on Monday as they start to think about how they're going to vote.
Jim, we originally invited you to appear on the show we were going to go deep on testing and what that was all about. Talk about what we do now with regards to testing. Is there still value in the organizations that have already moved forward with this conversion to do some testing? Talk us through that a bit.
Sure. And I think the quick answer is, yes, the simple answer is that there still is going to be value in moving forward within executing parts of the overall testing roadmap that we recommend from ICD-10. And to kind of step through that and give a little bit of clarity to that, the first thing we'd look at is that when we look at ICD-10 testing, it's been interesting leading up to this point, everyone having their different perceptions on what testing for I-10 really meant. And as we've worked through and laid out a testing roadmap that we've been implementing and helping our customers work through, we've broken it down into three major, what I call swim lanes of the types of testing. First, there's the system testing, the technical testing to determine whether or not the functionality, database structure of all the different applications that are within our customer sites can work properly with ICD-10. And we're typically looking at, on average, anywhere from a typical hospital and health system has anywhere from 20 to, I've seen as high as 70 different systems that are used within their organizations that are impacted by ICD-10 and required a level of upgrade. So there's definitely a lot of system testing you need to do to make sure that the systems can technically flow data through. The next major area of testing is knowing that there's so many external dependencies is to make sure that organizations can communicate properly with external parties, and most specifically, where a lot of the work's happening right now is what they're doing within clearinghouse and payer testing. And you know, the folks who've been staying closest saw that Medicare provided a small window of a limited type of technical testing that they provided earlier in March, and then they opened another little window of offering up to 500 providers a chance to test up to 50 claims nationally in July to do some more advanced testing with that. It'll be interesting to see whether or not Medicare still proceeds forward with those plans for July. But a lot of the work has been about the payer testing, make sure that we can get claims out the door that are validly constructed, and then starting to put together tests that would give us some visibility into how the payer community would remit on those pieces. And then the third major swim lane, if you think about the systems, we think about the payer testing, which is, it requires the systems to be ready, but it's more than just system testing. The third part is what I call the business process testing. And that's where you heard Joe use an example of one of the primary types of validation exercises within that type of testing is dual coding, where we're actually looking to organizations to start coding charts, production charts, selectively, both in I-9 so they can get paid, but also pick out some cases to continue doing ICD-10. I think in terms of when it makes sense to continue forward with dual coding testing is going to be based upon how they can move forward and what type of other plans they want to put in place. One of the thoughts that we're kind of floating around right now as we start getting into seeing how the vendor software is working is whether or not if this gets delayed to 2015, there may be an opportunity, to I'll use a phrase that's often used within different types of system testing, to do a partial live in the dark. And what I mean is there may be opportunities that coding organizations could still theoretically go live using ICD-10 workflows and processes, knowing that they're still going to generate I-9 codes that can be sent off for billing. So those are things that I think we're going to continue to test, and particularly if this delay goes through, we're going to turn a lot of attention towards validation and testing of concepts like that so that we can figure out how we can help the customers gain as much value out of the work they've done to date, not have to table it, stop it, and just restart it all this time next year, and see if there's ways that they can start getting through some of this without having to wait until October of 2015 or later.
Joe, any additional commentary on testing?
One of the reasons I think we wanted Jim to come on is to sort the whole testing out. I mean, in 4 or 5 minutes, he really gave us the whole roadmap and the partial light in the dark. I love that. The only thing I could add is the sooner organizations get to dual coding, I'm working with 3 different organizations, 2 at arm's reach, all have started dual coding on a very small basis in the last month, and they're learning things already, even with a few charts a week. So there's plenty to be learned about how I-10 is going to be handled differently from system to system, to payer, through their clearinghouses. So the sooner organizations get started, the better.
All right. Well, gentlemen, let's get down to brass tacks here. So, Jim, let's assume for a minute that this delay goes into effect. And your clients all call you on the phone panicked. What's going to be your advice? What are the 2 or 3 things they need to do first to prepare and to deal with this delay?
Well, I think the step one, because we're already having these, is just take a deep breath and pause. Don't do anything rash. Don't go and say, let's just stop. You know, I think the key is to go through, you know, as we've said, customers, we've said, structured the readiness plan into about 8 to 10 different work streams of different targeted work. And I think what we're going to start doing is taking the organizations through a rational step-by-step process on what makes sense to continue on path and why, what makes sense to possibly look to suspend or slow down. And I'll give one key example to that for that. Let's think about education. It now is around the time when organizations are actively trying to prepare their user base, all their different, you know, in some cases, thousands of employees who are affected in some way, to start getting them trained and educated on what their work is going to look like in an IC10 world. In some cases, coders should be completing that training by now, because we're looking to try to have that training done so they can roll into those dual coding validation processes like Joe spoke about. In other cases, we're real active in the physician education, because the physician education is about helping them document better. It's not about teaching them codes. So that training can continue along, because that's going to help the organizations now. If they can improve documentation, it could help their reimbursements now. The third part of it, though, is all the other training for folks who need to understand how to interpret different codes. We're probably going to look at suggesting if it gets delayed, that gets suspended. So just in the one example of education, we'd see continue completing the coder education, continue the physician education, and look strategically evaluating whether or not there's some of the other types of education tracks that you may want to suspend to make sure that we're supposed to be more just in time. And then take that same type of analysis through to what are they doing in terms of coding, what are they doing in terms of clinical documentation, what are we doing with the systems and IT, what are we doing with revenue integrity and payers, and continue through all the different major areas. So it's the quick thing is, don't rush into anything, and let's take a rational approach of figuring out what makes sense by the components within your program.
And Joe, let's not forget, this isn't just affecting the providers. I mean, there are a lot of reputable organizations that have been out there helping these facilities with this conversion. This impacts them too. What's the best moves for them to stay on top of this and continue to serve their customers well?
You mean in terms of consultants and
vendors?
Yeah,
that whole side of the thing, yeah.
Yeah, I think they'll have sort of the same approach. Todd, they'll have to, first of all, you know, I agree with Jim wholeheartedly. During the last delay, too many organizations have come out and said, hey, we took our eye off the ball and we shouldn't have. If this happens again, we'll keep progressing, especially if it's just one more year delay. Secondly, what do those organizations do? You're going to have to rationalize your plans. For example, at one of the things at one of my clients, they have an ambulatory implementation going on right now where they're replacing a bunch of small practice management and EMR systems across 7 practices, and there's 3 or 4 systems that are being replaced by 1 big system. And so they're in the process of doing that implementation at the same time they're getting ready for ICD-10. Well, this delay may afford them to decouple the activities a little bit so that there's not the pressure to do ICD-10 testing at the same time they're doing implementation testing. So vendors will have to look at what they've committed to. I believe in many cases vendors are overcommitted out there, and they'll have to rationalize that with each of their customers and say, hey, how can we take advantage of this time, reduce some of our mutual risk, and make a schedule that still makes sense and still has us progressing forward as opposed to stopping or pausing.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I hate to say it, but we're running low on time. I really appreciate the pivot here in discussing this the sudden news of this potential delay with the ICD-10 conversion. Jim, appreciate your patience with us. We promise to get you back on the show and go deep on testing as we'll have to have that conversation soon enough as it is. But appreciate you joining us. Before I let you go, Jim, how can people get in touch with you and learn more about E4 services?
I think the cleanest way would be to go to our website, which is www.e4-services.com.
All right, Jim, thanks again for joining us. And Joe, my friend, thank you for your leadership role in putting this roundtable series together. Once again, how can people get in touch with you and learn about Results First?
Best way to contact me is on Twitter. Just contact Resultant, and you'll find me there.
Joe Lavelle, owner and president of Results First Consulting, and Jim Hennessy, the CEO of E4 Services. Gentlemen, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that wraps this special edition of the Healthcare Insider. On behalf of my guests, Joe Lavelle and Jim Hennessy, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you soon on the Healthcare Insider.